Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Oh, it's fun.
Crazy.
It's painful, but it's wonderful.
What is the name?
It's Royce Unchained.
Patrick Royce. It's my Wally Pip game here.
Yes, it is.
Judd Zolgad went to Vikings camp, and he's given me the keys to the car here.
Judd showed me where his heart is. It's with the purple and, yeah. And writing something for the website rather than and also TikTok and all that other stuff that he's doing. And are you absolutely blown away at Judd's love for TikTok?
It is pretty remarkable.
And how long does a TikTok-y thing last? 30 seconds?
Yeah, 30 to 60. Here's your kicker, Pat, is it's me who is posting it. So it's Judd recording all the work, and this is classic. I call Doogie high maintenance, and I call Judd needy. Those are
so
my two different.
It can't be that difficult to post if you learn two easy steps or something.
Yeah,
right?
it's mostly just uploading a 45-second video that takes about 45 seconds to do and creating a little caption and making sure all the right things are tagged.
Apparently, our attempt to shut down TikTok because it was part of the Chinese government propaganda didn't work out too well with the youth of America or even the older guys like Judd. So now that when Twitter got discovered by the older crowd, the younger crowd went away from it, right?
Correct.
And then we had Instagram. And then I think that's obviously still big because a lot of young ladies are making a lot of money off it by
influencers.
Influencers. But TikTok, what's the one where it disappears after 15 seconds?
Oh, that's Snapchat.
Is that big now or not?
It's not as big as it used to be. It's being kind of.
And what was the object of that? Because I would think most people want that stuff to live if they think they did it real good, right?
Well, or something. The original basis of it, because it launched when I was in college. It launched about 10 years ago. So I would have been a freshman in college 10 years ago this time. So I was 18, 19 years old. And the lure of it was to send a picture that would erase after you'd done click it. So you would send a photo and it would be away.
It would be to several friends.
It'd be several to friends or to maybe, to your significant other or maybe a racy photo
bit.
That was also
gone.
It was gone.
And for instance, the nosy government or the police or anything, can they track down Snapchat stuff they can old emails and stuff or not?
I think so.
Old messages.
Well, I was just listening to Levitard the other day and the day after the incidents in Uvalde and whatnot what was the other shooting, the big one 10 years ago? Sandy Hook.
Sandy Hook.
And they had the red flag law that on Facebook Messenger, authorities can be called in if there's messages that are flagged and, suspicious activity and whatnot. I don't know if that's the same with Snapchat. I'm guessing it probably is. Probably is. But
so here's the deal: it is amazing how rapidly this phenomenon has taken place because we started doing the morning show, ran 13 glorious months in February of 2009.
Okay,
and we used to get Julio Ojeda on from the St. Paul paper to talk to us about this crazy damn thing he was writing about Twitter.
Yeah.
What is Twitter? Is the goofiest thing I ever heard of. What are you talking about? And I remember on my flip phone,
yeah,
starting off trying to send, and it would take 15 minutes to write 140 characters.
Yeah.
And I had no Julio Ojeda Zapata. He was great because he was extremely serious, no humor. And we were all making fun of this thing. And now it's passé, right? I mean, it's still big and it's still powerful, but it's the only one I participate in because the other stuff is too. Even Facebook, for you? I'm on Facebook, but I don't know if it was Hubbard or the Star Tribune that put me on it. And I don't have any idea what my password is. I've never gone through the process of changing it. I might have thousands of messages in there telling me to do whatever they want me to do.
Well, Facebook, you know, Facebook's the one that has the oldest crowd and the oldest demographic.
Yeah.
All the older people, as you like to see on those Star Tribune article comments, those same people live on the Facebook comments.
They're still on the Facebook.
Yep.
So, well, it's so TikTok. I mean, these are Instagram. What's the biggest now? What's the king?
I would say TikTok and Instagram.
TikTok and Instagram. With anybody under 40 30 or something.
And I would say the more kids that are in high school right now or entering college, I'd say are definitely more on TikTok than Instagram.
And Twitter was basically captured by political rivals, which... When it started in 2009, I mean, Obama was president, and we were all fairly happy. And, you know, the racists had to be in hiding then. You couldn't just go out on Twitter and have the time of your life because racism was still something you kept in your heart and you didn't express publicly. But it's, you know, it is amazing what the media becomes. And I've always said, you know, that the comments in the newspapers, you know, they're not that old. That's like mid-2006, maybe.
Oh, okay. The evolution of the comments.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Too late. You know, first of all, I covered the Olympics in Sydney in 2000. Actually, we had three people there, Rachel, Jay Wiener, and me in Sydney. And we had a 17-hour time difference.
Right. Yep.
And we still didn't make use of the website. We had, I don't even know if it was what it was labeled as. I don't think there was like this StarTribune.com entity. But in 3 weeks there, I might have filed something that was occurring in the afternoon, which was the middle of the morning.
Yeah.
I might have sent 12 paragraphs in, you know, like 3 to 4 different updates that if somebody happened to stumble onto this website, they could read that the U.S. baseball team won the gold medal. You know, before we wrote it for a, I always recall that when the U.S. men's team beat Lithuania in the semis, when they almost got beat, Lithuania had a shot in the air and we were waiting and I was in the mix zone on my cell phone doing the morning hit here.
Yeah, yeah.
Talking about a basketball game that I was then going to write for the next morning's paper.
So,
yeah, so I mean, we were like a day behind on everything, and we still weren't worried enough about the website to, you know, hey, get your stuff in as soon as we can. We'll post it, which is the way it is now, you know.
So forgive me here, showing my age and my youth, because obviously I was 8 in 2000, and that was right around the time too. I became like my conscious sports memories started. 41 Donut is my first real Vikings vivid memory that season.
That's a good one.
Yeah, I remember the ass kicking they gave the Saints the week before. I remember my dad saying to me very vividly, "I think we're going to go to the Super Bowl."
Yes,
and boy, were we wrong.
The promising young sports writer at the St. Paul at the Minneapolis paper, Sid Hartman, came back at least twice from that week at Winter Park saying, "I have never seen a team so confident they were going to win a game as the Vikings. Denny Green is absolutely certain they're going to win the game."
Yeah. But back to the Olympics. So were you, when you had to file a story, and even pre-2000s, you covered other Olympics too, right? You were in Los Angeles,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I was. The first one I covered was 84, yeah,
yes.
L.A. I covered six.
So what was the process of getting stories there? Where were you faxing? Like, how did that work?
In the first, I think, yeah, 84, what were we doing? We were computerized by 84, but
okay.
Those of us at the St. Paul paper always had the inferior equipment until the Radio Shack became the big deal. But for instance, when I was the first guy to ever take a computer out of the St. Paul paper to cover the Twins in 78, my last year.
Okay.
But it was a Texas Instrument, which was like a typewriter. It weighed 5,000 pounds.
Yeah.
And it had two breasts on top of it. Had two brassieres on top of it. That's what you would. You would put the phone in there, and you had to carry treated paper with you. You had to interview. The great thing, and like at the World Series or stuff like that, in the press box, anybody got a roll of paper? I thought I forgot my paper at the hotel, you know.
It's so, like phone chargers now.
Yeah,
if you need a phone charge, just ask a beat writer. They'll give you one.
Yeah, and so in the St. Paul, the Minneapolis paper had the Porta Bubble, which was like the Telegram, which was three steps above. So it was a great pecking order at the big events. You know, St. Paul, the second paper in all these other towns, Dallas, Fort Worth, us, all the second papers in a city, in a market or an area, we'd have these rotten damn Texas Instruments because they were cheaper. And then the New York Times and the Washington Post and the Star Tribune would have Porta Bubbles.
Yeah.
And have the higher level one. But yeah, the computer started in 78. So I really didn't cover an Olympics or a but before that, we were still typing through 1977 with the baseball and would hand it to what they called Sportscom, and they'd send it to the office.
Okay.
They'd fax it to the office during the game. Then at night, because I covered for both papers for the Twins, morning, the Pioneer Press and the Morning Dispatch, we had to lug a Xerox machine along with us in a big case and have it in the hotel and then send it in the morning or when you got back to the hotel in the afternoon. But you had to lug that with you.
I remember to this day, I always find it fascinating that guys like Dave Campbell or Brian Hall, but when they send in an AP story, they still call in to say, hey, my game story's been filed.
Yes.
I'm this person. It's this game ID. It's this game.
Okay.
I still find that hilarious to me because that seems very old school.
Well, I, at least, you know, I'm a old part-timer, and I'm about the only one that still is allowed to email my copy to various editors because there's a, you know, first of all, I'm not an official employee. I'm a retiree who's on a contract. And there's something that they've changed about three different times, but people now send their own stories and then they're allegedly edited, but certainly not like they used to be. But they write on a select site for the...
Yes.
And they tell me it's easy, but nobody's ever sat down and taken the time to try to get it through my... I think they also have to go through a process to make me eligible to do it. Too.
Well, when I would, either for Score North back in the day or when I used to write for Bring Me the News on and off two different times too, we use, it's a site called WordPress, which is that's the most common one.
Yeah,
you know, people have the body and your headline and usually... No, if you had your editor, yes, you'd save a draft. Your editor would come in, edit the draft there. Then it'd be published, you know, to the electronically to all the sites. So it is pretty fascinating to watch all that evolution.
I drive them crazy though. If it's not so much on deadline, which I probably only 20% of my columns are probably written on deadline anymore.
Right.
But I send my in, I read it, I finish it. And I always write in Microsoft Word. I read it in Microsoft Word, send it to, then put it on an email.
Right.
And then I read it again on the email, and then I resend it. Then I send it to the various parties. And then half hour later, I go through it again just to get a new look at it to see if, And I'll always send in four corrections or words missing or stuff like that. And, you know, Chris Miller, whoever sports editor, always gets it. And he says, I'm awaiting the next version. Yeah. He says, I have this. I'll await the next version before I send it to what they, wherever they put it.
So there's a, there's a couple copies of your rough draft before the final draft.
Yeah, I always, unless you're really on deadline and then you got to pray for the old time editing that you used to. But, you know, I mean, the Star Tribune is still very well staffed.
Yes.
But the amount of people who read your copy before it gets in the paper has been substantially reduced.
Right.
You know, there used to be somebody on the desk, and then the guy in the slot would read it once, and, you know, everybody. And now it's, you know, there's, especially in the remote time, you know, in the remote era that, you know, used to be able to just call the desk and say, hey, who's reading me, blah, blah, blah. And now it's, I just found something, who's reading me. And now it's different, but we're still blessed over at the Star Tribune to have a full staff. So anyhow, yeah, it's, but it, the phenomenon of social media, as we call it, is it's only like 20 years old, you know, it's in Twitter, you know. Mm-hmm. Twitter was 2008, 2009, something like that.
Yeah, some have come and gone already. It's pretty remarkable.
And I could never imagine myself when it started. I thought, yeah, this is kind of silly, being a nut.
Yeah,
you know,
well, I'm addicted to Twitter.
Twitter.
I'm addicted.
And especially, you know, especially when they changed it to 280 words.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, 280 characters.
That was huge.
Instead of 140. Because you could have it, you could actually send out some information once in a while or complete the joke you were trying to tell. it's hard to have some nice satirical joke in 140 characters.
Yeah, 140, you know? You're right.
Yeah, it's too hard to get to the punchline.
No
so,
kidding.
So anyway.
Patrick, obviously the Twins have been playing these Tigers, these lowly Royals. The AL Central has just been a gong show this year.
I don't think the Royals are that bad, but they have been bad.
Yeah.
But I like their team. I like for the future. I think Bobby Witt, I would, as I've said a couple of times, I'll take him. You can have any player you want on the Twins roster, anywhere in the system. I'll take Bobby Witt.
Yeah, he's going to be a stud player.
He's going to be phenomenal. I don't think they're terrible, but the Tigers, who thought they were going to be much improved, they're on, somebody I heard Probus say yesterday, they're on pace to score the fewest runs in 60 years or something like that. But right now, what the Twins are trying to piece together, I'm not walking around shocked because they've lost two out of three to the Tigers.
Right,
I mean, it's plus it's baseball.
Yep, you know? Happens.
I mean, the Phillies were playing terrible and went out and beat the Dodgers three straight before they finally lost a game. And then the Dodgers came back to Philly and kicked the crap out of them. But, you know, it's baseball. But don't look now, but Toronto's won six in a row.
Yeah.
They're starting to roll and you're going up there. And God knows who you're going to pitch.
Yeah, a lot of.
I mean, I have no idea who they're. Joe Ryan supposedly is a non-vaxxer, so he won't be back. And, you know, you won't have Kepler because he's apparently a non-vaxxer. And Kirilloff is in town in Detroit. He didn't play yesterday, but I'm hearing rumors he's a non-vaxxer.
Heard the same thing.
So, they go into the. You go to Rocco right now and said, Rocco, we'll give you one and we'll give you a split of these last two in Detroit and one in Toronto. What do you say? He'd say, yes, thank you very much. I'll take that.
So probably a five, you know, they have, I believe it's nine games against Toronto, the Yankees, Tampa Bay coming up after this series.
Yeah. If they don't get their team, they're
so if they walk with probably five wins, you'd obviously would take five. You'd take four?
Three.
You'd take three?
You're going to run Devin Smeltzer, God love him. He's been fantastic. You're going to run him out against Aaron Judge and Giancarlo and all those, you know, those monsters?
I will say, and he'll be here next week, it appears just early on, the Twins might have won that trade with the Yankees between Donaldson, getting Urshela, and Gary Sanchez so far.
I thought at the time they had, really. Mm-hmm. I mean, I can't say that. I thought Urshela was a good player, and I didn't mind having him. He's better than I thought. But the fact that Sanchez only had to get out of New York to regain a level of confidence and stop being beat up and you know, he's not a good catcher, but no. It's not like he's turning around and running back to the back. They made it sound like he's one of the worst in the history of the game. And I saw Smeltzer giving him all kinds of credit. Now, a lot of that stuff is BS, but he just seems to me like a guy like the weight of the world left his shoulders when he got out of New York, when he was getting booed and stuff like that.
Well, I mean, I was talking to my buddy who's a huge Yankees fan, and you know, they had that little blossoming, that re-blossoming with Aaron Judge that came up. You know, Didi didn't really fulfill Jeter's prophecy, yeah. But you know, Gary was, as he explained it to me, he said Gary was the second, I mean, it was supposed to be Judge and Gary, and they were going to carry the, you know, the next core of Yankees hitters.
I had the MVP ballot the year Altuve. What year did Altuve win?
Was that 2017?
Yeah, the year of they won the World Series and people didn't like the garbage cans. But wasn't that 2017?
I believe that was
correct. That's 5 years ago now and we're still talking about it. well, I had him on the MVP ballot like eighth or something, Sanchez that year.
Yeah, he was good.
I remember putting him on the MVP ballot. Of course, I had Doge on the MVP ballot that year, too. That's the year he had 42, right? Wasn't it?
And Gary, that year, had one first-place vote. Might have been, or one, you accumulated 1 point of a vote. I don't know if you wouldn't get a first-place vote.
No, but that might have been my vote.
Yeah.
But you know, he was dangerous. And he's playing good for him. And Urshela, they absolutely won the trade. Because, first of all, Donaldson's a complete knucklehead.
Yeah.
But you know, the shortstop, they could have lived with the shortstop, though. I think that guy's a decent player.
Sure.
Yeah, you'd rather have Correa, but when he plays, so.
I loved, I was listening to Lebatard yesterday, and the brilliant Stu Gatz pointed out how great it is that Tommy Pham and Jock Peterson get suspended over slapping each other for a fantasy football bet.
Yeah.
And meanwhile, Josh Downs gets one game for calling Tim Anderson Jackie. And
Jackie.
That's where we draw the line
and
in baseball.
And trying to explain it. Well, I heard him say he was Tim Anderson is supposed to process this whole thing when you keep repeatedly calling him Jackie, obviously to needle him. So, yeah, that was Donaldson is not. I mean, there's some stuff going on up there that just. I think he thinks he's smarter than anybody else, and he's not.
You know, I praise that signing. I was happy when I couldn't believe that they pulled it off, and I thought his kind of personality and that jackass persona basically that he has would be actually a good influence on a ball club like that. And man, it couldn't have been further than the truth. Yeah,
yeah. And you thought, oh, him and Cruz, but it took about a week to be in there. We were getting in the clubhouse, and because Cruz is over there, and they all love him, and you had these two incredibly different personalities on each side of the clubhouse, you know, that were supposed to be, you know, these veteran leaders. Well, one of them, Cruz, was like the greatest. He bought Spanish food for all the Spanish guys. At 4:30, they'd come in with a cart of his food. And he was genuine, and Donaldson was crazy. You could see that. But I think everybody kind of knew that.
Yeah.
You know, the rumor's always been they were going to make an offer that made it look like they were trying to be aggressive. But not get him.
Yeah.
And then
it
turned out to be the best offer, so they had to sign him because they put it on the table. I mean, they would have had to flunk him in the physical or some damn thing.
Yeah. You know, I saw, it's June 1, and I saw that because it's now June 1st, we've now officially entered that. I was watching MLB Network this morning, and John Morosi was on. We're in now the first hot stove trade deadline, you know, primer of that.
Okay.
I know the deadline's later this year, but now that it's June 1, we get to actually look at, you know, trade targets. And once again, he was talking about Frankie Montas, and he mentioned the White Sox and Cardinals as two teams he thinks could make a run at them. Now, Phil and Judd and I kicked around this idea yesterday on Mackey and Judd, and Montas has been brilliant this season. He's been exactly who he is. But would you give up? At the time, we said Royce Lewis. I don't think we'd give up Royce Lewis, and we don't now know how severe his injury is, but would you give up Austin Martin, the Twins' number two prospect and the top one they got in that Barrios trade a year ago, and another, let's call it another top 10 prospect? Is that enough, you think, to get Frankie Montas?
Probably going to get beat out by somebody, but is he a free agent now or another year?
I believe he's a free agent after this year. I think he's a rental.
Yeah, well, I don't know. With a rental, everybody thinks Austin Martin can hit. but he hasn't been tearing
He hasn't
it
been
up.
Hitting in double A
He
yet.
Hasn't been tearing it up yet, but everybody, you know, I'd call him up and say, I got a chance to trade you. I'm not going to trade you if you get a haircut. I don't like guys having it down to their waist. Okay, I don't mind at the shoulders. Nah, not down to the waist. But no, I don't know because I don't think they're good enough. Yeah. I don't think they're good enough. I just, if the Whiteys don't get their act together, they might accidentally win the division at 82-80.
Yeah.
But they're not. They're not good enough. This pitching staff is, even with Frankie Montas, well, you get Sonny Gray to go. Is Sonny Gray healthy and Frankie Montas, and you could win a.
Go Ryan, you know.
You know what they could do? They could win a playoff game.
Yeah.
That's really our only goal, is to end the 18-game losing streak.
That's
right?
Fine, yeah.
That's the only goal. But
well, I was 11 years old.
I have gone from bashing the hell out of them, though, to saying, okay, you can't operate with this way. You can't. When you don't have your team, you can't operate, and they don't have their team. And and God knows when they're going to get their team, you know. So it's, and this Toronto series could not have come along at a worse time.
Yes.
You know, you got a bunch of guys hurt, and then all of a sudden you got four or five who can't go play.
Is it looking like you think so far, probably a Yankees-Dodgers World Series, do you think, if
I don't think the Yankees are a cinch, but the Dodgers are. Dodgers are. You know, the over and under on the Dodgers was, what, 100, 101 or something? I mean, it was an all-time record high over and under, and the over is going to win. I mean, they're going to win 110.
Yeah.
San Diego's good. San Diego's hanging in there, but they're going to end up 15 behind them. I mean, the Yankees, this Dodger team has not really hit their stride, and they're still, you know, winning 2 out of 3. So, yeah, I think the Dodgers for sure, although the National League's better than the American League. So, I don't know. But the Yankees, if they stay healthy, that lineup is when Giancarlo Stanton goes from an automatic out to getting base hits to right field. Now he's hurt right now, but that happens often. But they can still hit home runs in a era when in a season where home runs are being phased out. So yeah, in that ballpark too. Oof.
I have tickets to the Wednesday game. When they're here. It's Skull Night. It's the Vikings Skull Night that night. So they're giving away the Vikings beanie hat, and I'm sure Kevin O'Connell will be there.
It's going to be interesting if they draw people for the Yankees. And by that, 30,000, I mean, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday.
It looked like on Saturday or Sunday's game, and I was watching it at a cabin, but it looked like actually the lower bowl was pretty decent on Saturday.
Yeah,
decent for their
27.
Measure.
27.
Yeah, that's not bad.
What were they giving away? Something. I was there. I couldn't figure out what it was.
I was there for the United. They gave away Minnesota United jersey, I believe, in the middle of the homestand last time. I don't know what they gave away.
They gave away Twins hats with the air conditioning in them.
Oh, yeah. One of those ones.
Those were Friday night, I think. And then Sunday, I don't know. It looked like something was getting. They got the Top Gun hat coming up. Oh. That'll be a big seller.
Pat, I went last night.
Was that last night?
It was incredible. Obviously I'm born in 92 and we reviewed the original for the second time on the podcast last week. So, and that was only my second time viewing the original Top Gun.
Okay.
And it's product of the circumstance. Like, I just don't understand the hype that everyone loved of that movie for the '80s. Now I will say the new one last night was incredible.
Everybody loves it.
Captivating. It was incredible.
My youngest son, Chris, Mr. Baseball, spent 4 years in the Marines in the flying division, in the planes. And he will never go to the second one because he's still so offended at the first one because the way they killed off, what was his name?
Goose. Anthony Edwards.
The way they killed off Goose with the canopy was complete horse crap. It would have never worked that way. The plane's going 500. You hit the thing and the canopy takes off in a fraction of a second at 500 miles an hour. And he said it was nonsense. And he's extremely offended that that they would come up with this. He said they should have had him eaten by a shark.
Yeah.
It would have been more it would have been more realistic. So he's out on the second Top Gun because of that. I'm sure it's great. I just, you know, first of all, I hate to do anything that helps Tom Cruise.
Yeah, he's and a whack job.
And B, I don't know. It's not, you got to go see it in the theater, obviously.
It was,
you know,
yes.
You can't wait for it to come to TV and watch it there. It's you won't get the effects.
So. I haven't had many movie experiences in the pandemic, but I can confidently say it's the best movie I've seen in the pandemic in theaters.
It's the first gangbusters one. Yeah. They're hauling in hundreds of millions of dollars.
So. And it's funny.
In that way, it's good. It's,
yeah.
It's get people going back to theaters. But I went to, what did I go see? But 2 weeks ago, I went to, what was the name of that? Something Somewhere. What's the movie? Something Somewhere, whatever it is. And it wasn't bad, but they showed, first of all, the previews lasted 15 minutes. Eight movies. One kid movie, seven sci-fi,
yeah,
horror, or action figures, yeah, come to life movies. There's no movies.
Yeah, I know.
I want a movie.
Yesterday it was Buzz Lightyear, yeah, another kid's movie, a brief tease at a creepy horror film.
Yeah.
And the other one, I don't even remember what. Oh, the new Elvis movie that's coming out.
No,
Tom Hanks.
No, I didn't see that.
Yeah, that looks all right.
Go.
I'm curious on that one. I would probably go see that.
You know, I'm not fully anti horror.
Okay.
I loved the first
Quiet Place. Oh,
the
God.
First one. I'm yes. sure the second one was hokey, but the first one was great.
Yep.
Because the concept was fantastic, and you know, I thought that was great. I'm not all horror. This Elvis movie, though, cannot be as good as Bubba Hotep. Did you ever see Bubba Hotep?
I did not.
Bubba Hotep is, Elvis is alive in a nursing home.
Okay.
And there's a creature around and stuff like that. Elvis is that Campbell, that, what's, is it Bruce Campbell? The guy,
yeah,
who's
Bruce
in
Campbell,
those,
isn't it? Yeah.
Those crazy movies. You watch it someday.
Okay.
It's a wonderful, I don't know what it is. It's a farce. It's a horse, far silly, sillier than hell. But Elvis is in a nursing home.
It's funny that your son brought up the aviation thing. So my brother was in the Air Force and did tactical maintenance on F-15s. And he always hated Top Gun because, same thing, the cocky pilots,
yes,
that he can't effing stand that he had to actually work with.
Yeah.
And these bastards would come, you know, my brother's busting his ass, and so his crew members are busting their ass to make this plane
and
work.
They're and all looking
and
at
they're
you, looking down at
looking
you.
Down and kicking the wheel and, you know, testing something out, and just he got furious. So he's also kind of anti-Top Gun for those exact reasons, too, that he spent all of his life fixing the damn things and he hated the pilots.
That was 36 years ago, though, right?
Yeah, it was. Yeah, 86. 86
wow.
was when
so
the original Raul came out.
Cruises. 60 now then.
Yeah.
Huh? Early 60s?
It was interesting because I believe they were supposed, they did all the filming, I think, pre-pandemic. I think most of it was done pre-pandemic, and they were going to release it, I think, middle of 2020. And then Tom Cruise, being the psychopath he is, delayed it, didn't want to release it in the pandemic. He didn't want to release it last year when we were still kind of getting back to normal.
Yeah, well, he probably knew what he had, too. Yep.
And then before the movie started, actually, there was a cameo of him on set, and he says, thank you so much for coming to this. It's, you know, been decades in the making. We've had to wait extra time because of COVID. And he brought up the fact that, you know, they actually did live, you know, Cameron fighter jets with people that were actually flying the planes and stuff. So it wasn't just all crazy special effects. There was some reality to it to a degree. But it was very good. It was a phenomenal
film.
It
shows my age, but I love the movies. Like, my favorite Star Wars movie is the first one, because they had to work
right
to make it. You know, they had to build stuff. They didn't just do it with graphics. I love movies. The first Jaws, they had to build stuff. It's not with gravity. The first Jaws was fantastic.
Yes, great movie.
I went to the first Star Wars with my two kids. They weren't that old then. That's how long ago it was. Downtown we went, and I liked it better than they did, the first Star Wars.
Yeah.
I think because the spoof part of it was the satire within it was great. The characters are great. And then Jaws, another one I went to with low expectations. The first one, fantastic.
Yeah.
Robert Shaw and the boat and the whole deal. And as they become easier to make, I don't like them as much because I, you know, showing this thing streaming through the air on a graphics is, you know, the hell with it. But that's, you know, this is just me. This one, obviously, they were able to use a lot more graphics than they did the last time, right?
Yep. Yeah, it was.
How long's it go? It got to be 2.5 hours. Not really.
I think it was a little over two. I don't believe it was 2.5. If it was, it was close to that. But it paced so well that I didn't feel like I was in there a long time.
Who played Deborah Winger?
We
had to have the love interest, right?
Jennifer Connelly.
Jennifer, I might go to the movie then.
And what was unique here? And
but she's 40 now, so yeah. who was her boyfriend?
Tom Cruise was.
So
what they did was, and brief spoiler alert here. So
he isn't the main. Is he still the main character, or who are the young hotshot pilots?
The main young actor there would be Miles Teller. Do you know who Miles Teller is?
Yes.
So Miles Teller plays Goose's son. He plays Edwards' his son. And then Val Kilmer actually is involved. And Val is
no longer with us, right?
I think he's still alive, but he can't speak. He had throat cancer, and his throat's been removed.
He's as fat as me last time I saw him.
And they tied him into the movie, which was brilliant. And they actually used his throat cancer in the actual film. So they mentioned that he has throat cancer in the movie, and he can't speak. I think he's still kicking. He's 62. There was that great documentary on Amazon last year. I mean, he's nearing the end. He can't talk, and
he aged about as poorly as
anybody. I know. 62 years old, he is still alive.
Okay.
He's still alive.
Yes, all right. He died.
But what they did with Jennifer Connelly was, so there's, they tied her into the beginning.
She's never in a bathing suit or anything.
She runs a bar in this one because Kelly McGillis was the love interest in the original.
Right. Yes,
and so she's not involved in this at all. Where they did with Jennifer Connelly was they mentioned at the beginning of the original Top Gun that Maverick had a little an affair and a little time with the Admiral's daughter.
Uh-huh.
And that's who Jennifer Connelly's character is in the new one.
The Admiral's daughter.
Yeah. So they brought up when they're getting their ass in the original Top Gun in 1986, him and Anthony Edwards getting their ass chewed out by the Admiral for just being, you know, fighter boys. And he mentions to Maverick all the rap sheet bad things he's done. And he says, and then he had the runoff with the Admiral's daughter.
Yeah, well, Jennifer Connelly is way too young to be the Admiral's daughter from 1986. If she was of legal, if she was 17,
yeah,
she can't pass for 53.
So that's where they tied in the new one where it was the Admiral's daughter. And it's pretty brilliant, actually, when you kind of think about it, that they were able to do that to a degree. But yeah, it was great. I'm glad
to see some movie getting people to go back to the theaters because I fear that industry.
I know
has something. I saw a very good. I think I told you this movie I really liked that was in the theaters, but you could also buy it. The Outfit, which has got that Mark Rylance in it, and is it The Outfit?
The Outfit, and he's a
he's a suit maker. He's a cutter for suits, but that's not what he really is. But it's really good. But it's a movie. It's like lines and conversation,
right?
And all that stuff we used to love. So I gotta ask you, what has in your youth, which you still have. Even in your time of being a hockey fan, it's been a great transformation that home ice doesn't mean anything.
Doesn't mean.
Do you have any theory on that? Why has it? I mean, we used to. You go in.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, the crowds are crazier than they've ever been, screaming and hollering and yelling. It's got to be a change in the athletes, doesn't it?
I think so.
It's got to be a change in the athletes that they're so sophisticated now that they've played in all these, they've played in showcases since they were 12 and mm-hmm. the pressure and the whole thing. Because it doesn't, you know, three of the four quarters semifinalists were the lower seed.
Yeah.
They gave up the home ice. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Colorado's the only one of the seeded teams that won. How the Hurricanes turn around and get beat by the Rangers, I have no idea.
You know, they had, you know, Ranta got ran over again and or strained his groin, I should say, and they were playing their third string goal. It's actually remarkable. They played 14 mm-hmm. playoff games with three different
We were
net
almost
miners.
To the point LaFontaine was going to play.
Yeah, I think we were.
Is he there? Is he there? Did they call him up?
I think he was. He had to have been the next man in line.
The backup, yeah.
But, I mean, look, I think also a lot of those teams, and I don't know if this is, you quantify it, but, you know, with the Rangers, they've had veteran players, and they're riding their, you know, this young Igor Shesterkin, who's going to win the Vezina. I mean, he looks like he's a stud. Tampa Bay's been there and done that the last 3 years. You know, Edmonton's a little, if you would have said at the beginning of the year, you know, everyone loves Connor McDavid, but, you know, do they have enough in the tank to get all the way to the Stanley Cup?
Calgary was heading that series.
Yeah, and Calgary has been great all season long. I didn't think Edmonton stood a chance in that series.
Now Colorado gets, they got nine last night, right?
It was nine to six, I believe.
But Kemper's hurt.
Yeah.
So now they got Peter Gudavid or some damn thing I never heard of.
It's the new
NHL with goals. Goals are now legal in the playoffs. So. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's been an entertaining Stanley Cup. You know, we've had numerous game sevens, and even with some minor upsets here and there, it's been fun. It's been a good playoffs.
It is interesting. I say that the NBA has had some good series, but the games have all been 25 points. You win by 25, and then you go on a row and you lose by 25, or sometimes the other way around. And it's been unpredictable, but the games there have been very few nail biters. I think Phil said this yesterday, that best series so far might be Wolves-Memphis.
Yeah.
You know, as far as not knowing who was going to win.
Right.
At least at the end of the game.
And I think Golden State takes care of Boston. I don't know. I don't know how you feel about it, but
I like Boston is weird, man. Tatum and Brown when they're
playing well, they're good.
They're cooking there, and you know, you still got Draymond trying to guard a guy 5 inches taller than him. So they'll probably win, but I think it's appropriate because I always saw Wiggy as a world champion, didn't you?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Wiggy.
Maybe his numbers, Wiggy. Phil pointed this out today. I don't know if it was on with you or not, but across the board, and I know it was only five games he played in the playoffs with the Wolves, points, rebounds, assists to a T, the exact same.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But he's the fourth fiddle.
Yes. I said, if he's the best player once out of every six games, it's fine.
Yeah.
You know, if Curry's having a bad night and Klay Thompson is, I mean, if they're not making their threes and he does something, he looks great.
That's Wiggy.
He's a better 3-point shooter now than he was, but I mean, it's great for him. He doesn't have to do anything. And he actually, I heard a couple of interviews where he gave a minimal attempt to actually answer the question, which is something he's never did in his time here.
Yeah.
He even got when he got his $125 million, he wouldn't even say anything.
Oh, God, he was bore-ass. He was as boring as it got. Pat, it's been 10 years since Dark Star. I saw you had your column today.
Yes, I wrote a column today. I could have. I've had a few people saying, well, you didn't have anything about his Tom Kelly relationship. And they didn't allow me to write a chapter of a book.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
You have to make your choices with the dark man when you're writing about him. That was 1,200 words, which is 410 more than they want, 420. And I could have written 6,000 right off the top of my head without even talking to people. I kind of tried to approach it from the media standpoint this time.
Yeah.
And, but I mean, I have, you know, I tried to keep away from the personal type of stuff for the most part. Like I was telling you guys today that, you know, the four or five times we went out to La Costa in August where there was a chapter to be written about each one of those trips.
Yes.
Man. What a beauty. And we would, first thing he'd do when he got there, go down and find the starter and give him $100. And then we'd tee off first. The course in August, fairly busy.
Yeah.
We'd go down and tee off, the first tee time was 7:30. We'd tee off at 7:15. With the great James Brown as our caddy. He was a beauty. Dark had his own LaCosta caddy because he'd been there quite a while.
Of course,
And then we had fun tying it in with the Eddie Reed handicap because that was the big joke. You can't miss the Eddie Reed, man. Some people can't miss the Derby. Some people can't miss the Preakness. Darkie and I, we couldn't miss the Eddie Reed in San Diego for about 5 years or so. Yeah, he was, I've never had a friend that close who you basically couldn't believe a word he told you. I mean, you didn't, it wasn't all BS.
Right.
You suspected it was, that it might be. And you never even challenged him. You never even said, that's not true, Darkie.
Right.
You know, he was like his story that he was a horse handicapper for the Herald Examiner in Los Angeles. He was one of their selection box guys, and that's how he got the nickname Dark Star. I never bothered to check because he was basically working in the bag room at a golf course out there.
Right.
One of the Bel Air, one of the golf courses, Riviera, I think Riviera. But how he really, and I didn't repeat how Dark Star occurred. He occurred because he called Joe and I to tell us that Bud Grant was resigning for the second time on Monday Night Sports Talk. And we'd never heard of him, didn't know who he was, but he called out and said, this is Dark Star. Bud Grant's going to resign again. We went with it. In the spirit of the show, we got a source here. Bud,
right.
Goodbye, Bud. Too bad you didn't stick around one more year. And everybody denied it. It got out enough so that everybody denied it. And then 2 weeks later, Bud quit.
Bud quit.
And then Suits wrote a column for the St. Paul paper saying there's a new tipster in town. Sid has been replaced by Dark Star. And he's the guy you go to for information. But then I talked to him a couple of times, and he was trying to tell me about this, that he was a horse handicapper because he Canterbury was opening in 85 and 86, I guess, was their first year. Was that right? Or maybe they had already opened, but remember it was huge. Well, you don't remember. You were not born. But it was huge the first year. It was a thing because we didn't have a lottery yet or anything. This is the pick six was the, hey, they're giving away $300,000 to pick six. Get out to the track.
Yep.
And so the St. Paul paper had a handicapper named Danny Tata. And then they had a selection box with three other guys in there, including Phil Maroudis. And Danny was kind of a Chicago, he could have played a character in Goodfellas.
Yeah.
And, he had a domestic case, and he got fired. So then we took Phil Maroudis and made him the handicapper, but that left a selection box opening. Now, Dark was not out there yet, right, as far as a guy. And I called him up and said, have you ever been to a horse race in your life? I said, we're looking for a guy in the selection box. Because this was like Tuesday morning. They wanted a third guy to make picks for the Wednesday paper.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, I'm your guy, blah, blah, blah. Let's go. So I call up our sports editor and said, I got your guy, Dark Star.
Dark Star.
He's even got the nickname. And he was in this, and so he got in our selection box. And the next thing you know, it was in the winter Danny got fired. So they had to, it wasn't. I can't remember. So I went out there to hold his hand the first day. He went 0-for-9 and on the picks. And then, he started schmoozing with the trainers and stuff. And he'd already been out there schmoozing with the guys. And pretty soon, he's calling in Steve Cannon's show, giving him the report from Canterbury unsolicited.
Yeah.
And then he all of a sudden he's the host of the Canterbury Report show. He talks his way in there doing the TV stuff. But he, you know, we created a character called Dark Star on the radio, but it was getting in that selection box in the St. Paul paper that really, and all of a sudden he's filling in. I told you this story 50 times that he was hosting the Dark Star show at the Dilly Sports Bar in Anoka.
Okay.
And on Wednesday nights, the Dark Star show, and he harassed me for months to come up there and be on it with him. This was before, and you, driving up to Anoka back then was there was no road. It was terrible. We had to get on 169 or 10. And, you know, you run into 50 lights, and then you get into Anoka, and it's snowing. I get up there, and it's snowing. I get there, go down to the basement of this place. It's in the basement. No Dark Star. He's not, he's filling in on CCO. Billy Ward from our paper was the host. So I drove up there. I said, why didn't you tell me you weren't going to be there? He says, because then I knew you weren't going to show up, you know. So, yeah, he was, you couldn't get mad at him. He would talk his way. If he'd done something to really should have irritated you, he'd talk his way out of it in 5 minutes. So.
You know, my dad liked him a little bit because my dad liked Common Man and loved his appearances with Dan Cole. But, you know, and I was, you know, I mean, he died 10 years ago. Yeah. Obviously, I was 19 years old. Yeah. But I just knew his name.
Well, you didn't spend a lot of time listening to CCO, bro.
No, I wasn't. I wasn't.
He had a lot of trouble with women.
Okay.
Popularity with women. Because, I mean, a couple of his girlfriends, one of them is a good friend of mine. But they, inappropriate aged girlfriends.
Got it.
And, you know, they were more companions than anything. He liked to take them out to dinner and do stuff like that, and he liked to have these beautiful young ladies sit next to him at Timberwolves games. That story was in a column today, but 50-year-old women would see this and say, "Look at that guy!" You know, I mean, it was it would be worse today than it was then, but still, you know. My wife had a bunch of friends that were women in the media, and they did not like him at all. And I've told this story that they would say, "How can your husband stand that guy? How can they tell? How can he tell if? How does he know if he's telling the truth?" And I always said to her, "Tell him what difference does it make? They're great stories. I don't care. I don't care if it's the truth or not."
Yeah.
But he's one of the most unforgettable friends I've ever had, and. I said this, I'll say it again. I've said this all week that as this was approaching the 10th anniversary of his death, at a wedding, a guy came up to me and said that, you know, Dark told me you were the brother he never had.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, that's really nice. I was close to him, but I know he told 150 other people that too.
That's right. Said that last year.
It's a small group.
Yep.
It's not a small group. That were his brothers, the brother from a different mother. He'd say that a lot of times. So he was a beauty. He was an unforgettable fella. And, you know, it's funny how I talked to Coley and we all had the same inclination on that Friday because we knew he hadn't been feeling good when we found out that he hadn't showed up for Coley's show and he hadn't. Then I tried to call him. He had two cell phones. There was not a burner. It wasn't a burner, but there was one that was his phone that everybody had. And then there was the other one where if you really needed him, you'd call that one and he'd usually answer it. It was like not everybody had that one. And he didn't answer when I called that one. And I got really concerned. And then they went and Coley said when he didn't show up, he said he's dead. He's not going to. The reason he's here, he's dead. And sadly, that's how it turned out. But man, he lived the life.
Yeah.
He wasn't rich, but he lived like it. Right.
Yeah.
What the heck?
Not bad.
That's
final thoughts, sir, before we wrap up here.
Final thoughts are. I guess that The column I really liked this week was Chip's column on how everybody's happy. Yep. Chip had a great column. We're a real team. We don't have fear anymore with the Vikings. Mm-hmm. We're really satisfied with the Timberwolves. We got all kinds of new phrases to use with the Timberwolves and the new owners, even though they only own at this point 60.5% of it or something, one out of six. And everybody, we're just happy. We're just giddy as could be here because everybody's getting along until you lose the first one.
Yeah, so. Then it'll happen. We'll come crashing down to earth. All right, sir.
All right, sir, Declan. Who needs Judd, huh?
Who needs Judd?
Yeah, I don't know. How about Judd?
All right, Dan Seaman, give
me
a raise.
Judd, you can take off any day you want. Actually, Monday usually, but today's Wednesday. So. All right,
sir.
See you.
To be your best every day, you need proven quality sleep every night. Science proves your best sleep is vital to your mental, emotional, and physical health. And that's where the Sleep Number bed comes in. And let me tell you, ever since I've had it, my sleep IQ score is just going higher and higher. And did you know 8 out of 10 couples say that one of them sleeps too hot or too cold? Science tells us regulating your sleep temperature leads to higher quality sleep. For many couples, temperature struggles are a real challenge. So here are some tips to help you both sleep just right. Look for beds designed with temperature benefits, such as the new Sleep Number Climate 360 Smart Bed that actively warms and cools each side so you both sleep blissfully comfortable. And now save 40% on the Sleep Number 360 Special Edition Smart Bed, plus special financing for a limited time. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com/podcast1. Sleep Number, the official sleep and wellness partner of the National Football League. Subject to credit approval, minimum monthly payments required. See sleepnumber.com for details.